just go. They didn't have time to waste. The white boots had made it to the ceiling's rafters. Although they were admittedly far away, they wouldn't be for long. Lola wore the mark of an assassin. The white boots might very well shoot first and ask questions later. Muck, Lola murmured. She put her coat around the cord and slid upside down. During that split second of falling, she bit on her lip so hard it bled. Lola muttered to herself and moved inches at a time, quickly, in a worm-like fashion that would have made En laugh in any other situation, and was three-quarters of the way when her hat slid off, exposing the white of her hair. Gunshot. It missed. Lola shrieked and grabbed hold of the beam on the other side. Two more gunshots. En crouched, her stomach in her throat. No, please no, she thought. I didn't even want to come here. I shouldn't have come at all. Lola pulled herself onto the beam and slid forward on her stomach toward the window. She motioned for En to hurry, but En was frozen. A bullet clattered off the beam below her feet. En recited Lord's rules to herself. Don't let them see your fear. She took her first step on the cord. She was steady. Breathe. Never allow yourself to be lost. She took another. A gunshot whizzed past her outstretched arm. She ran, quickly, lightly. One stride, two strides, three strides. Then she slipped. She caught the rope by her underarms, and for a few seconds, no one shot. They thought that she was about to fall. Trust no one unless you must. She raised her arm so that the cord slid into her hands. It was a miracle she hadn't touched bare wire. One kick forward turned into a swing. Two swings and she got her legs onto the beam. Lola jumped through the window while En lay down and kissed the metal of the rafter. En stood up and followed hurriedly, her acrobatic grace failing her in her rush to escape. Her foot caught the windowpane, and she toppled over the other side onto a roof. En landed on her back, and it knocked the wind out of her. Lola, lying beside her, punched her shoulder. Good job, En thought she meant. Your shats, she probably also meant. She couldn't argue. En sat up and leaned against the wall. She was breathing hard and fighting down the urge to either laugh or cry. The Scarhands gawked, gathered around a different window where they'd watched Lola and En brave the cord. The girl who'd known Kelvin covered her face with the coat she'd used to cross, her shoulders heaving. We should still be moving, En said. The white boots saw us leave. She looked out into the distance at the unappealing view of the factory district. Someone tapped her arm. It was one of the kids. Who are you? Seance, Lola answered for her. En shot the blood gazer a furious look. What sort of game was she playing? Are you one of the Scarhands? She looked at En's unmarked palms with confusion. Lola grinned. Would Scavenger be brave enough to do that? No way, the girl said. She looked at En with the kind of reverence she had once seen Muncie direct at Levi. En had nearly forgotten why they'd come to Scrap Market in the first place. Ignoring them, she pulled the newspaper from her pocket and flipped through the pages until she found Lord's article. Lola nodded urgently. We should leave. But En wasn't paying attention. The ink was too blotched to read anything but the title. Not forgotten. The paper looked as if someone had submerged it in water. En stared at the incomprehensible words and balled the newspaper in her fist. That horrid man! This had been her last chance to hear Lord's voice, and it had been a trick. Tears blurred her vision. Usually she'd feel embarrassed for crying in front of others, but now she no longer cared. Lola put her arm around En's shoulder. It was an intimate gesture for someone who carried such conflicted feelings about En's well-being. We need to leave, Lola said. You're the Lord. Her words sounded forced, an act. She leaned down closer to En's ear. They're waiting for you to move, and we all need to get out of here. The others surrounding them watched En hesitantly, as if waiting instruction, as if En really was a street lord. Lola's desperate look urged her into action. They crawled across the sloping roof of the warehouse, then jumped the building beside it. En landed gracefully on her feet. Lola, however, crumbled to her knees as soon as she hit the cement. Unsurprisingly, hopping roofs was an exhausting activity. When they reached a rooftop several blocks away from the factory, En and Lola huffed for breath, and the Bloodgazer's hands were covered in scrapes from repeatedly stumbling and bracing herself. They were a safe enough distance away that the kids had begun to scatter. Now it was just the two of them. "There are thousands of them in the north side, just like that," Lola said. "Pulling stunts, haunting gang territories, hoping to be noticed by the guild or by their lords." She grimaced. "They'd be the most vulnerable if another war broke out on the north side. There's no one to protect them." En's heart twisted into something painful and ugly. She didn't have it in her right now to listen to one of Lola's accusatory tirades. "Why did you call me Seance?" she asked, fighting to keep the tension out of her voice. "All lords have a street name. I thought you wanted me dead. A weapon to whoever owns me and all. I still think you're dangerous, maybe more dangerous than I first believed. I thought the city would claim you, break you." Lola paused, looking intensely into En's eyes. "Now, I think the city could be yours to claim." En grimaced. "That wasn't your decision to make." Lola was too late anyway. En was already broken, already claimed. "Do you want to know the real reason I dyed my hair white?" Lola clenched her fists and turned toward the skyline. "After we lost our parents, my brothers and I swore we wouldn't go near the gangs. We were young, so we worked under the table. My oldest brother was attending a music conservatory on the south side, and once he finished, he was going to take care of all of us. Then I found out he'd been lying. He joined a gang, thought it was an easier way to provide. And when that gang fell, I watched him get shot. I watched him die." En held her breath. She hadn't asked for Lola's story. She wasn't prepared for it. It was an unwelcome reminder that her tragedy wasn't the only one in the world, that she wasn't the only one who carried scars. Now she understood why Lola hated guns. "After that, it was only me and my younger brother left. But Justin, he didn't just mourn our brother. He obsessed over him, the gangs, the north side. He stopped caring about me. He stopped caring about anything except his own ambitions. He joined the Doves." Lola took off her top hat, letting down her white hair. "When you join the Doves, your name is replaced with a new one. You do not leave. You speak to no one." Lola clenched her fist. "And so I moved to Doveland, dyed my hair white, and started working for the Orphan Guild, all for a chance at a scrap of information. Anything to lead me back to Justin, to know if he's even alive. Even if he doesn't care, I still do." Lola finally turned to face her, her expression unusually soft. "So I get it. We're each looking for someone. We'd each do whatever it takes to find them. In the end, we're the same, and if..." She cleared his throat. "If you did call yourself a lord, if you claimed real power, then maybe you could help me find him." En took a deep, strained breath. It had felt wrong to interrupt Lola during her story. But now that Lola had told her the truth, En would need to share hers. "Lords is dead, Lola," En said softly. And Lola tensed. "She was dead before I even came to New Rains." En sat and hugged her knees to herself. "I don't even know why I came with you to Scrap Market. Looking for the article was a waste of time." She'd been deluding herself anyway. Lords wouldn't have spoken to her daughter through the words of the article. It would have been ink, not a voice. She would have written about revolutions or elections or change, and none of those things really mattered. She wouldn't have told En that she loved her. She wouldn't have been able to hear En tell her that she loved her too. "I'm so sorry, En," Lola said, crouching down beside her. "How did you find out?" "Levi and I visited the address. The Street of the Holy Tombs." En untied the mask and dropped it at Lola's feet. "I'm done with this now. The searching. There isn't anything left to find, and even if there was, it's too dangerous. I'm sorry about your brothers, and I'm sorry about what you thought I was. But I need to focus on staying alive. Lola turned away so En couldn't see her face, but En sensed that she was disappointed. The two girls weren't quite friends, but they'd come a long way from being enemies. You're giving up! Lola's voice cracked. Even if she's dead, there's nothing left to find. En turned her back. Before she leaped to the next roof, she said one more word to Lola, a message intended for someone else, someone who wouldn't ever be able to hear it. Goodbye.
Levi. Cedric expected the vaults in 2 days, and Levi was 2,500 short. Beside him, Jack licked his hands and smoothed back his blonde hair. Levi straightened his tie and rolled up his sleeves to expose the tattoos on his arms. A message, just like his million-volt smile. He was the Iron Lord, strutting into a gambling tavern. His territory. His kingdom. They turned the corner. The lights of the gambling den were dimmed by heavy shades on the windows. It was called Dead at Dawn. Open at midnight, closed at sunrise. As Levi cut through the line outside, the bouncer eyed his black tattoos and his blacker eye.
Pop, he said. Back from the dead. I heard Chez killed you.
News travelled fast on the north side.
Funny, I've never felt better, Levi replied with a tight smile.
The man behind him growled for cutting to the front. Levi bristled, though only slightly. This was a gambling den, and he was, had been, the gambling lord. He could do what he pleased.
That so?
The bouncer asked. He looked at Jack.
If Chez were lord, he'd have your oath, but you're with Pup.
Interesting.
Jack bared his teeth.
My oath belongs to the Iron Lord.
Levi tipped his hat, and the bouncer held open the door as they passed through. Light bulbs flashed everywhere, dangling from the ceiling by wires, and a jazz band played in the back. The air was so thick with cigar smoke that when Levi exhaled, a patch of clear air formed around his lips. Levi wove through the tables searching for a game of trops. They had specifically chosen this den because it wasn't a client. None of the dealers were irons, which meant they were unlikely to encounter trouble. As Jack split from him and headed toward the roulette wheels, Levi slipped into an empty seat at a trops table. The young man beside Levi wore all black clothes and an obnoxious feather behind his ear. He grinned at Levi with rotted teeth and white lips, and he reeked of dead flesh.
Nice feather, Levi said. That new. Needed something new now that I'm the Scar Lord, Jonas Maccabees replied. I see you still got the tattoos, though. Those reminders are forever.
Jonas and Levi had never gotten along, but for some reason Scavenger's voice lacked its usual edge. Maybe being Lord suited him, or maybe Levi's not being Lord suited him as well.
I still keep wondering why, Jonas said quietly. We never messed with the Torrent.
Levi swallowed a lump of guilt and grief.
I've got no idea. If Raymond was here, he'd call you a liar. Are you going to cause a scene?
The night was young. There were other dens. Jonas ground his teeth.
Not tonight.
As the dealer passed out the cards, Levi did his best to ignore Jonas's silent fury and horrifying smell, so he could focus on the game. His hand wasn't all that terrible, but not all that good either. He carefully fiddled with the cards concealed in his sleeve. He didn't win the first round, and the second time he drew only low cards and folded immediately. Even when he tried, it was hard not to think about the due date in 2 days, circling him with fangs bared. About En telling him she was alone. About Chez on his old throne. It didn't help having Scavenger beside him, a physical reminder of how he'd risen while Levi had fallen. When he found his opportunity, Levi exchanged the cards in his hand for the better ones up his sleeve. It was dexterous, fast. Not even Jonas beside him had seen it. Levi didn't need to think to switch the cards. The movements were automatic, memorized from a time when he still sat on street corners, dressed as a legend long past, asking victims if they'd like to play. His short winning streak distracted him the way only hope could. He slid a miniature tower of chips to his pile as the dealer passed him his new card. He grabbed it. The smoke of Dead at Dawn cleared, and Levi stood in front of a white door in the hallway. Dimly he recalled what Zula had said about the hallway, about the shade that bound him and N. But really all he could think was that he needed to find a particular door. He reached forward and turned the knob of the one in front of him. It opened. Levi stepped into a room filled with familiar smoke and murky lights. He was in Dead at Dawn, but he hadn't woken up. The men shouted, a whistle blared. After he pushed his way through the sweaty bodies that reeked of absinthe and cigars, he reached the edge of the boxing pit. Jack lay on the ground. He wore only a white undershirt and his pants. Who knew where he'd left his jacket and button-up? The man above him kicked him in the side, but Jack was already unconscious.
"Jack!"
Levi shouted, panicking. The opponent lowered himself to his knees and punched Jack in the face, again and again. The floor below them glinted with blood and a missing tooth. Then the opponent paused and looked up at Levi. He winked. Levi recognized him as the man who'd followed him into the burning building and scrap market, who'd delivered his second shadow card, who'd stopped him from saving Raymond. This was Cedric's second reminder. First Raymond, now Jack. Levi's heart stilled. This wasn't real. This wasn't happening. The dealer must have slipped him a shadow card, so this was only a hallucination. Nonsense, just like anything to do with the hallway or Zula's talent for reading shades. But if this was real, like a voice inside him warned, then Levi needed to stop it. He needed to wake up. Levi checked his brass pocket watch, and judging by how long he'd played trops before he passed out, this scene was either happening right now as he slumped unconscious in his seat, or just a few minutes into the future. He knew only one way to wake up from the nightmare, and that was to die. Levi tapped the shoulder of the man beside him. The second he turned, Levi punched him in the nose. It broke with a satisfying crunch and a gushing of blood. The man stumbled back into the crowd and cursed. A heartbeat later, his knuckles collided with Levi's jaw. Levi moaned, hoisting himself up with the help of the barrier encircling the boxing pit, and pulled his knife from his pocket with no intention of using it. The second the man saw it, he pulled out his own, with every intention of slicing it across Levi's throat. Three punches, one kick, and 30 seconds later, he did. Levi gasped and woke to the feeling of cold liquid being poured onto his head. He sat up, his skin clammy, and wiped the gambler's ruin out of his eyes.
"I thought you might have died," Jonas said cheerily.
He set his empty glass down and held out his hand to help Levi up, but Levi shook his head and stood up himself. He didn't want Jonas to feel the shadow card hidden inside his clenched hand.
"Feeling kind today?"
Levi asked, trying to catch his breath.
"Kind?"
Jonas echoed.
"No one's ever accused me of kindness."
Levi's gaze fell on the table, and he cursed when he realized all the chips he'd won were gone. Whatever. Jack was more important, and if the scene from the hallway was as prophetic as Levi feared, Jack might already be in the ring. Levi's reputation was already down the drain, and now he'd fainted in front of another street lord. Jonas smiled, and though they were the same height, it still felt as if Jonas was looking down on him with cruel delight. He'd always liked to watch Levi squirm. But Levi didn't care about losing his reputation anymore. Not like he cared about losing his best friend.
"Never mind,"
Levi muttered as he shoved the card in his pocket. He grabbed his hat off the ground and turned, trying to find his way to the boxing ring. He raced down the flight of stairs and into the room from his vision, following the word "pit" painted in red on the walls. His wounded leg and broken rib throbbed with each hurried step. Jack was still conscious. He staggered as the man, Cedric's man, the same from the vision, punched him in the chest. Levi jolted for a moment, seeing his vision so clearly confirmed, and then he fingered the gun in his pocket. But shooting Jack's opponent was a big risk. Levi wouldn't be able to pay Cedric back from a jail cell, Nor would prison protect him from the Don's vengeance. Besides, unlike Eight Fingers or Ivory, Levi wasn't a killer. He rushed to the referee who sat on a chair overlooking the pit.
"You have to stop the match," Levi told him. "Why is that?"
the man asked, his eyes never leaving the fight.
"That boy's only 17. He's not of age. You got a birth certificate?"
The referee took a sip from his glass. Jack tripped. His opponent kicked him in the back. On the other side of the pit, the man who'd killed Levi during his vision cheered Jack's opponent on. Chills spread down Levi's back. It certainly wasn't a sight he saw every day. He whipped back around to the referee.
"Please."
Not something Levi said every day, either.
"Get lost."
Levi spotted a bar 20 steps ahead, and he didn't even stop to think. He ran. The bartender shouted as Levi jumped over the counter and grabbed two double handles of absinthe. He charged at Levi, but Levi was already leaping back over the bar and heading for the pit. Levi yanked open the lids and poured the alcohol all over the straw-covered ground of the ring. The referee whistled, but he ignored him. When Levi snapped his fingers, a spark flew out and ignited half the pit. Levi jumped. He hit the ground and fell into the flames, but as he rolled out into the dirt, the fire on his clothes extinguished. Jack lay on the ground, deathly still. His opponent stared at the inferno with wide eyes, and the crowd above scattered and charged toward the stairs. Jack grabbed the opponent and twisted him around. The man must have recognized Levi from Scrap Market, because he grunted when their eyes met.
"Tell Torun that if he lays a hand on Jack," Levi snarled, "I'll burn the flesh off his bones."
Dangerous words to say to a Torun. It was the sort of thing any of the Torun cousins would take pleasure in doing to him. Levi pulled the gun from his pocket. Before he could aim it and make a proper threat, someone else's bullet hit the man between the eyes. The man wavered for a moment, blood trickling down his brow bone, nose, and lips, and then he collapsed at Levi's feet. Above them, Jonas pocketed his pistol and motioned for Levi to hurry. No time to be fazed by the man shot 2 feet in front of him, Levi picked up Jack. The fire was gaining, and even if it wouldn't hurt Levi, it would burn Jack, and carried him to the edge of the ring. Jonas grabbed Jack's arm over the barrier and hoisted him over.
"Why did you help me?" Levi asked breathlessly. "Who doesn't want Pup to owe them a favor?" "I..."
To understate it, the idea of owing Scavenger a favor sounded less than appealing.
"Thank you."
Jonas snatched the black feather from behind his ear and set it on the referee's empty chair, like a calling card.
"You tried to save Raymond. I didn't forget."
Jonas headed for the stairs and left Levi in the burning building with Jack. Levi gritted his teeth. This time he wouldn't try to save anyone. He would save Jack. Levi slapped Jack lightly on the cheek. The hideous black stitches on the eyebrow had unlaced, and the cut oozed with blood.
"Wake up! Time to leave!"
Jack's eyes didn't open. Levi threw him over his shoulder, which was no small feat, given Jack's broad frame and Levi's broken rib, and hauled him up the stairs and through the gambling room. Outside it was still night, though it felt like hours had passed. Jack groaned, staring slightly in Levi's hold.
"You should have forfeited, you sick head," Levi said.
He wasn't even sure if Jack had heard him. He stood his friend upright and slapped his cheek lightly again.
"Walk with me. You're killing me here."
His leg, his rib, his everything screamed out in pain. Jack muttered something unintelligible and stumbled forward, the bulk of his weight still leaning against Levi's shoulder. When they finally made it to St. Morse, Jack was mostly lucid. Levi laid him on the couch, then handed him a glass of whiskey for the pain. He hurriedly rummaged around his drawers for first aid supplies. Jack was covered in scrapes. Levi bent down to open the kit and winced. Muck, his rib hurt. Jack reached forward and his fingers twisted around the buttons in Levi's shirt.
"You hurt. Let me help."
Levi pushed his hand away. Jack's split talent for taking away pain was inviting, but he knew better than to agree. When Jack took away pain, it didn't disappear. Jack carried it himself. No matter how many times his friend offered, no matter the circumstance, Levi always declined. His pain was his own, and Jack always took on more than he could manage.
"I'm stronger than you think," Jack grumbled. "But not as strong as you think."
Levi grabbed Jack by the jaw and opened his mouth.
"That's a nice missing tooth."
He stuffed a wet teabag into the empty spot.
"This will help the bleeding."
The scene reminded him of the Jack from 3 years ago, the one who'd depended on Lullaby to lull him and his pain to sleep, no matter the acts of rage and recklessness it triggered during the day. This wasn't the first time Levi had played nurse, caught between worry and anger.
"I'm sorry,"
Jack said, as if he knew what Levi was thinking. Jack hardly remembered anything from that year. Levi slapped him on the shoulder.
"I know. Just try to get some sleep."
He headed to the kitchen and lit the oven. He'd had this idea a while ago, a bad idea, of course. He'd just left dead at dawn, empty-handed, and he had one more day to win back the vaults for Cedric. Even if he spent all of tomorrow gambling, there was nothing to win during the day. If he was going to pay Cedric as soon as the 10th day arrived, then he had only one more night, one more chance, and he needed to win big. Luckluster was the only other casino in New Rains that could shell out that sort of voltage in one night. It was a completely Schatz idea, gambling in Cedric's own casino. Levi knew that. But not if he was guaranteed to win. He didn't remember the last time he'd made glass. The special oven he kept in his apartment was the result of a half-hearted decision from years ago to fiddle with glass cores and false dice. The con had fallen through, and he hadn't used the oven since. But he'd never bothered to get rid of it. After nearly an hour spent kindling the oven, Levi reached inside and removed the pot of the glass mixture, which glowed a fluorescent orange. Fluorescence. He'd gotten that idea thinking about Luckluster and its famous neon lights. If he did this correctly, he'd be able to count cards alone, and quickly. Sleights of hand were near impossible to conceal from Luckluster's dealers, so with the stakes high, Levi needed a different assurance that he would win. He needed a miracle. He needed a con. After melding and slicing the mixture into the proper shape, he added a solution of blue dye and tonic water to the glass. He finished it with a clear galvanizer, then set the contacts on his counter to cool. As Levi poured the rest of the tonic water into a flask, Jack's snores echoed through the kitchen. He passed out, his mouth wide open, his empty whiskey glass set on the coffee table, and his hand was clutched around his creed. Levi retreated to his bedroom and lay down on his bed, still fully clothed. He fell asleep with the flask on the nightstand, a gun under his pillow, and the sunrise shining in his eyes, reminding him that only one more midnight loomed before Cedric's deadline. Day 9. The city of Sin is painted white so that the filth can stain. The city of Sin. A guidebook. Where to go and where not to. N.
"My dear," Bianca said when she noticed N standing at her door. "Do come in. I'd usually ask you to sit, but I'm afraid we don't have time for that. I have a task for you, though not of a pretty sort this time."
N crept into the room carefully, the memories from her previous experience in Bianca's office making her tremble. The carpet where Bianca had strangled her without even a touch. The chair where Anne had sat when she learned she would poison Cedric Torrin. The sweet, sinister smell of Bianca's perfume that Anne could still nearly taste as she inhaled. But their last encounter was over a week ago, she reminded herself. Anne was different now. Stronger, weaker. She wasn't sure. But what mattered was that that was then, and this was now. She closed the door behind her and approached the Donna's desk.
"What sort of task?" Anne asked.
After returning to St. Moore's from Scrap Market, Anne had collapsed and slept through the afternoon and most of the following day, but hadn't found it restful. When Bianca's woman had pounded on her door only minutes before, Anne had suspected a scolding for skipping today's acrobatics rehearsal. She had braced herself for anger, not for another assignment, and she didn't know which scenario was worse. Bianca clutched the armrests of her seat, her knuckles whitening, her veins bulging.
There's going to be a midnight party at the House of Shadows that mustn't occur.
More than anything, stay away from the House of Shadows. But it wasn't Zula's warning that made N's breath hitch. The House of Shadows was where the Phoenix Club played the shadow game. It was where Lords had died.
Are you familiar with the House of Shadows? The younger asked.
I am, madam, she said flatly.
Then you should be afraid.
N felt a coldness wrap itself around her heart, but it wasn't fear. It was anger. N straightened her posture, lifted her head up, looked Vianca square in the eyes. Regardless of what Zula had told her, N had submitted herself to enough warnings and rules for her lifetime. If the Donna was going to send N to the site of her mother's death, then she would be ready. And if given the chance, she would burn the place down. What do I need to do? The corners of Vianca's lips curled into a smile.
Cedric Torren is becoming a threat. I need him gone.
By gone, N knew she meant dead. The thought weighed less on her conscience than it should have, but she had hoped to never encounter that man again.
Why me? You have dozens of others at your disposal, N said.
Vianca had once boasted to her about the dangerous empire under her command, yet she was assigning a mere schoolgirl to perform an assassin's work.
Because you're still my secret, Vianca said. I can't have this traced back to me.
Vianca grabbed her tea kettle and poured herself a cup of chamomile, her hand trembling. N couldn't determine if age had simply weakened her hands, or if the Donna was truly nervous.
Cedric will recognize me, N said darkly.
Certainly the charade she'd played last time would be broken. Vianca's eyes roamed over N's body in a way that made her want to shiver.
I knew he'd like you. You really do look his type.
N clenched her fists as the memories of that night flooded back to her. She could feel the ghost of Cedric's hand against her thigh.
You didn't warn me what he was. Cedric has an army at his disposal. There were few circumstances in which you could have caught him alone or unprotected.
The heartless logic in Bianca's voice made N hate her. For the Donna, this was all a game, and N was a disposable piece.
If you had known, he would have grown suspicious. I played you to your own advantage. No, N seethed. You exploited the trauma of probably countless other girls, all so you could win. I've never been so disgusted. You're as much of a monster as he is.
Dangerous words to say to the commander of the Augustine family. N's grief had made her reckless. She wasn't acting like herself. Or maybe she was. The younger's nails drummed against her desk.
Careful, Miss Salter. You'll forget who the real enemies are in this city.
N examined her coolly, ignoring Vianca's words. No, she would never forget.
Whether or not he pays Torren back tonight, Vianca said. The preparations for his execution have already been made. The shadow game will be played tonight, at the stroke of midnight.
The shadow game? The weight of all N's anger, all her grief, hardened in her chest. Her conscience, a soft and fragile thing, was buried somewhere inside, someplace deep and dark and unreachable.
"Whose execution?" N asked. "Levi's."
Then, at last, came the fear.
"You're not alone."
But she would be, if Levi had been invited to play the shadow game.
"Why?"
N choked. Her confidence from earlier was breaking, searing panic seeking its way into the cracks. She would lose everyone she cared about to the Phoenix Club, one by one. Vianca's face clouded with something that could almost be mistaken as remorse.
It's my fault. But I have other plans for Levi. That's why I need you to save him.
Vianca Augustine was an excellent liar, but N could still hear the desperation in her voice. Levi wasn't simply an Amersa for her, not just a favorite toy. Even so, it was hard to imagine Vianca capable of anything like love or kindness. Having those feelings made her only more of a monster. If Vianca knew compassion, then she also knew the pain she caused.
Cedric will be at Luckluster Casino early tonight, waiting for Levi to arrive with the vaults. You must find Cedric before Levi does.
That only gave N a few hours. It was already 6 o'clock.
If you do it openly, I cannot protect you, Bianca said. You must kill Cedric quickly, and you must do it discreetly.
N waited for the Donna to provide her another poison, another dress. But when the silence stretched on, N asked nervously, What will I use, madam? How will I get there? Should I...
I cannot help you this time,
Bianca rasped, and N's mouth gaped. She would be performing this entirely on her own.
Unlike last time, this will have repercussions, and I will be the first they question. The White Boots know my methods. They know my men. Like I said, I cannot have this traced back to me. Can you accomplish this for me?
N took a deep, shaky breath. She wasn't sure if she would succeed, but she would certainly try, under Vianga's command or not. She'd already decided that she would risk danger if it meant saving Levi, and now the city was asking her to prove it.
I will do it for him, N said, not for you.
Bianca pursed her lips.
Everything you do, Miss Salter, you do for me.
N felt ghostly fingers scrape across her throat, the Omasa teasing her. N lifted her chin higher, unwilling to succumb to the witch's torment.
Now go.
For the past 9 days spent in New Reigns, N had thought that falling for Levi would mean losing herself, her final act of surrender to the City of Sin. But she'd been wrong. Naively, utterly wrong. When she burst into Levi's apartment, breathless and heart-pounding and nauseated, N searched every drawer, every hiding spot for weapons. Her only gun was out of bullets. She found none. Frustrated, she turned to the collection of forgotten things in his closet. She found another weapon of sorts, the perfect dress, clinging, silky, and black. Then she returned to her own bedroom and tried on the costume. She barely recognized herself. For once, that felt a very good thing. This time, she would be no one's doll. Vianca had intended her to exploit Cedric's weakness, and as repulsive as that seemed to N, she would play that role if she had to. However, attraction might be dangerous, but it wasn't deadly. In order to kill him, she'd first need to visit Lola to retrieve her stolen bullets, to take whatever advice or weapons Lola had to offer. And so, she formulated her plan. She put on her crimson noir lipstick. She pocketed her revolver. When N arrived at Luckluster Casino, she would hunt down the wolf of the City of Sin, and she would slay him. That was her surrender. Lola's green eyes peered through the bullet holes in her cellar door.
I didn't think you'd be back.
I need your help. The urgency in N's voice must have been obvious, because Lola quickly thrust open the door. She scanned N's outfit. Rather than complimenting her or questioning the formality of her attire, she commented,
You could hide a lot of daggers in that.
Actually, that's why I'm here. N pulled the revolver out of her pocket.
I need the bullets back.
Lola ushered her inside.
What's going on?
Cedric Torrin is planning to kill Levi at midnight, and I might already be too late to save him. N ran to the desk drawer where Lola had kept N's revolver on her initial visit. Inside was a pile of knives and miniature weapons, but no bullets.
And what exactly are you going to do about it?
Lola asked.
The Torrin family owns half the North Side. I'm going to kill Cedric Torrin.
Lola stared at her incredulously.
He won't make it out alive.
N slammed the drawer closed and grabbed Lola by the shoulders.
Levi is going to die the same way Lords did. I need to stop the Shadow Game, and all I have is a revolver with no bullets.
The Shadow Game? Lola's eyes widened.
The Torrens aren't part of the Phoenix Club. I trust Vianca's sources.
Lola's face shadowed.
So it's like that with Vianca.
N let her go and stared at the floor. She couldn't bring herself to lie to Lola anymore, even if it meant Lola abandoning her.
Time is already running out, she pleaded.
Please, Lola. After a few moments of consideration, Lola relaxed her shoulders. She drew a key out of her pocket and unlocked a different drawer of her desk. These were your bullets. She handed N three of them. Then she rummaged around for additional knives and weapons. You really can fit a lot of daggers in that dress. Killing a man with a gun? That would be easy, impersonal. N might not feel the guilt over murdering someone like Cedric Torren, but her skin crawled to think of how close she'd need to get to him to use a knife. To feel his hands grabbing her as she attacked him. To hear him curse in her ear as she ended his life. She wasn't sure she could do that. Do you have poison? N asked. Lola hesitated. I might. She pulled out a small leather case and closed the drawer. This belonged to my younger brother once, but he doesn't need it anymore. There was unmistakable sadness in Lola's voice. N slid off the lid. Inside was a syringe, filled with a wine-dark fluid. She reached in to touch it, but Lola slapped her hand away. It's almost instantaneous death. Very obvious, and very traceable. Which meant she'd need to get Cedric somewhere private. N shivered. It's an hour walk to Luckluster from here, Lola said. A 30-minute mole ride. It was 7:30. Levi could be there by now. Levi could already be dead. There's nothing faster? Nothing that I... Lola's face broke into a grin. You can pick locks. N's skin prickled nervously. She didn't like that daring look on the Bloodgazer's face. I can pick some locks. My neighbor sells mistress for the Augustines. Got himself this real nice house in Amberlight in his garage. It's fast. And brand new. 9 days ago, N would have immediately vetoed the idea. Stealing a car. It was dangerous. It was shats. But it was the fastest way to save Levi. So N swallowed her reservations, slid the leather case into the pocket of her dress, and asked, Can you drive? Levi. Levi picked up the card. The King of Clubs. He fought back a confident smile as the man next to him turned over a pair of queens and a three of spades. To reveal such an advantageous trop so early, the player was trying to seem cocky, even though he looked everywhere but the card table. It was the easiest bluff to spot. Levi took a sip from a glass of the tonic water he'd brought with him from St. Morse. Nobody noticed him dab his pointer finger in the glass as he set it down. On the back of the King of Clubs card, he stealthily drew a KC with his finger. Normally, Levi preferred not to resort to cheating, but tonight he could afford nothing short of winning. The rounds continued, and Levi easily outplayed the man's bluff. The dealer called the game for the Iron Lord. His opponent threw his cards on the table in defeat, and Levi took the pot. He'd won 2,500 volts tonight, which meant he had just enough to pay back Cedric, with his own casino's volts. Levi felt the weight of the pouch of orbs in his pocket, examined the mountain of red and black Luckluster chips in front of him. He was done. He was safe. He let out a sigh that he'd been holding in for months now, and leaned back into his chair. Levi had never been inside Luckluster Casino, and the Torrens couldn't have decorated it in any way more opposite to St. Morse's royal grandeur. Everything was red and black, the furnishings, the lights, the attire. But despite being one of the city's two richest casinos, inside it looked more like a cheap nightclub. The ambiance and color scheme was probably meant to appear fiendishly luxe, but even to Levi, who was certainly no prude, everything about the casino seemed vulgar. Fishnets, cherry lips, black lace, scarlet nails, satin bedsheet curtains, glow-in-the-dark artwork of lips and curves, dancers lounging in windows above the main gambling floor, their long legs and stiletto heels dangling from the banisters. He could finally relax, but the combination of the hyper-sexualized environment and the nagging discomfort of his glass contacts kept him on edge. Maybe the lenses hurt because he used vault glass. Certain objects in the room glowed with an unnatural shade of blue, like some of the other players' drinks and a few of the women's faces, probably from a chemical in their makeup. Looking straight into the fluorescent lights was blinding. He was getting a headache from it all. But 2,500 volts? Yeah, the peepers had been worth it. The dealer asked if they'd play again. What Levi needed to do was remove the contact lenses, hand over his 10,000 volts to Cedric and leave. But with his winning streak, it would have been a shame to end now. Levi hadn't earned this much in a single night in a long time. The dealer handed out cards to Levi and the four other players. 3 tens of diamonds. What were the chances? This was his night. After a few rounds, it was down to Levi and the man on his left. Levi, however, wasn't paying much attention, as his mind was already drifting to what he'd do after he paid Cedric, after he reclaimed his title and his reputation. For once, the future he wanted felt within his grasp. Round after round, his opponent bet aggressively. Levi examined the man's cards. Definitely 2 jacks of hearts. Levi had written JH on the backs in a previous round, which glowed blue through his lenses. He didn't know what the other 2 cards were, but Levi was certain his 3-of-a-kind trop was better. Levi tossed the 2nd 1,000-volt chip into the pot. The dealer nodded at them to reveal their cards. Levi showed his first, eager to admire the fury on the man's face. Then the man showed his cards. 4 jacks of clubs. Levi cursed and threw his cards into the center of the table. So he was 2,000 down. No need to panic yet. He'd leave lackluster once he made them back. The next few rounds he continuously received mediocre hands. The peepers couldn't help him get the right cards, and the risk wasn't worth the bluff. He lost only 300 volts. He waited until he'd finally been dealt a good hand, then he went all in. By the time they reached the 7th round of the game, Levi had collected a royal flush, a nearly unbeatable trop. Levi confidently tossed a silver 3,000-volt chip in the pot. One of the players who'd already folded whistled. By this point, the discomfort of the lenses had developed into a pounding headache that pulsed behind his eyebrows. As soon as he won this game, he desperately needed to take the peepers out and drink a cold glass of water. The dealer cleared his throat, distracting Levi from the throbbing in his skull.
"Your card, sir."
Levi coughed awkwardly and gathered his hand. They each showed their cards. His opponent had 3 jacks of hearts and 2 kings of diamonds. Levi hadn't seen the kings. Between those 2 small trops, he was done. Just like that, his pile was empty. 5,500 volts, gone, just like that.
"Muck, muck, muck," he thought. "Why didn't I just get out when I was on top?"
With very little left to bet, Levi stood. He trembled as the reality of what had happened dawned on him. He'd had the volts to pay back Cedric. He'd had his way out of this scam Vyanka started, and he'd ruined it. He could still pay Cedric a portion of what he owed, ask for an extension, but Cedric didn't have a reputation as a merciful man. It would be all or nothing. The fool laughed at him in the corner of his vision. Wherever Levi looked, the fool stared back. Levi spotted one of Cedric's cousins, the easily recognizable and widely feared Charles Torin, watching him hungrily from a nearby bar. Levi pushed his way out of the gambling room and away from Charles's ominous, knowing stare. The bathroom was thankfully empty. Levi bent over the counter and stared at his bloodshot eyes, his dark brown irises tinted a shade bluer from the dye. Not his best look. He took out the contacts and stuffed them in his pocket. His heart was pounding, and he tried to steady his breathing, but it was nearly impossible, due both to the anxiety tightening in his chest and the throbbing of his headache. He'd think of a new plan, run back to St. Morse and wake up Jack, who was probably still sleeping on his couch. They'd hide, maybe try the smaller casinos. Peepers? What had he been thinking? He played better when he wasn't marking cards. He didn't make reckless assumptions. Levi left the bathroom and returned to the lobby, locking his sight on the exit. He almost stumbled as he came face to face with Cedric Torin. The neon red and black lights cast harsh shadows over the angles of his face as he loomed over Levi. Cedric loosened his necktie, as if preparing for a meal.
"Lo, pup, you're in a hurry."
Cedric grinned wickedly.
"Do you have what you owe me?"
Levi cleared his throat and rubbed his sweaty hands on his pants.
"Just about. I'll have your vaults to you tomorrow, as promised. 10 days, right?
Cedric checked his watch.
Tomorrow starts in 4 hours, and we've waited long enough.
His tone sounded more excited than disappointed, and Levi's pulse spiked in fearful response.
You know, I thought Chez Phillips would kill you before I saw you again.
Cedric paused, taking in the stony expression on Levi's face.
What? Didn't think I knew about that. All of New Reigns knows you lost your throne.
The other patrons in the lobby passed Levi without so much as a glance, unaware exactly how trapped he was under Cedric's gaze.
You want your vaults or not?
Levi asked, working up the courage to keep his voice strong.
Because I can't work on those investments while I'm here talking to you.
Cedric wrapped an arm around Levi's shoulder, giving him a chummy smile that Levi knew better than to trust.
Why don't you let me buy you a drink? You look like you need to loosen up.
In his periphery, he spotted several of Torin's men guarding each of the exits. He had nowhere to escape.
This is the man who killed Raymond, Levi thought with dread. And I have no choice but to play along.
So Levi let Cedric lead him to a bar past the lobby. All the while he mapped the closest escape routes in his mind and kept a reassuring hand on the gun in his pocket. The air in the bar was so thick with smoke that the lights looked like they wore halos. The figures inside were silhouettes and shadow, giving Levi the eerie feeling that he and Cedric were alone, even though they weren't. They sat at the bar, and Cedric ordered 2 Gambler's Ruins.
So, Vianca's business isn't doing well then?
Levi fought to keep his face blank at the question, but Cedric chuckled affably.
Of course not. Or you'd have paid us back by now. My family always knew Vianca would run St. Morse into the ground. The vaults will come in soon. They're just a little late.
A coil of nausea unraveled in Levi's stomach, and he hadn't even had a real drink yet. Cedric winked at him conspiratorially.
Of course they will.
The bartender slid them their drinks. When Levi took a sip, the bourbon squirmed its way back up his throat like burning bile.
Did you know I'm running for Senate? Cedric asked. You look uglier in a wig.
Levi cringed inwardly after he said it, fully expecting Cedric to punch him for the thoughtless remark. Levi might have carried a gun, but if he made a move for it, one of Cedric's watchful cronies would shoot him before he even had the chance. Right now, Cedric had all the power. He could hurt him any way he wanted, and Levi would be helpless to protect himself. Rather than punishing him, Cedric merely twisted the ruby ring around his finger.
Remind me again exactly how Vianca has been investing my family's vaults. Bonds, trades, stocks, Levi answered automatically.
These were the words Vianca had taught him to say.
A portfolio that provides low-risk, high-yield returns. Low-risk, high-yield for St. Morse, I'm sure.
Cedric twirled a finger over his drink.
Poor you. You get the risk and none of the reward.
That was true. Vianca liked to claim that Levi got a share of profits, but Levi rarely saw a single vault more than he made during his shifts.
My father and Vianca had similar philosophies for running their empires. Everything under the table, all hired hands, keeping things as low profile as possible.
Cedric leaned in, as if he was truly just sharing wisdom with Levi over a couple of drinks. This was likely to be the last piece of wisdom Levi ever heard.
But those were the old days. Favors can buy more than vaults can. And I'll say it's better to make friends than enemies,
Cedric said, a strange glint in his eyes. Levi figured this was a very convoluted speech for Cedric to rationalize to Levi why he'd gone Southsider. The Torrens were, and always would be, a crime family. Even if Cedric lusted after the old money and respectability of the Wigheads, at the end of the day, those families had their names on libraries and hospitals, and the Torrens had their name on a casino.
My new friends, Cedric continued. They've suspected the truth about your little scheme for a while. I was worried at first, My father had invested in you prior to his death, but as it turns out, this has all been one big opportunity for me.
What kind of opportunity?
Levi asked, though he didn't need to ask anything really. Cedric had obviously wanted to sit him down and gloat. Whether Levi participated in the conversation or not didn't matter. But speaking made him feel less helpless. He still had a voice.
Apparently my friends have been rather bored for a long time, Cedric said. They're looking for any opportunity to play, really.
To play? Levi's grip tightened on the edge of the bar.
I'm paying you back, aren't I? You'll get your vaults tomorrow as planned, so what's the harm?
Cedric's lips curled predatorially.
It was never about the vaults.
His mouth dry, Levi took another sip of his drink.
Then what do you want?
Cedric laughed, a deep laugh that echoed in Levi's ears like the clunks and thuds of gravediggers piling earth on his coffin.
I'm delivering something to you, and in exchange, they are doing me a favor.
Cedric grinned.
Whatever I ask. That's power, pup. Not vaults, not sex, not anything this city is trying to sell.
Cedric pulled out a gleaming silver card from his jacket. Levi remained silent as he took it. Unlike the other cards, this one had no divination prophecies. It didn't need to. Its very existence foretold death. The Fool. His invitation to the Shadow Game. Just as in his vision, when Levi had seen the card on the tombstone, the Fool strode toward the edge of a cliff, a wicked smile on his face. Cedric leaned forward, so close that Levi could smell the coffee liqueur on his breath, and Levi's stomach twisted into knots.
You've got 2 hours.
What?
Levi rasped, even though he'd heard him perfectly.
Here.
Cedric reached into Levi's jacket pocket and pulled out his flask. Levi was so nervous, so frozen, he let him. Then Cedric dumped the tonic water out of Levi's flask on the floor and replaced it with the remaining contents of Levi's drink.
A little something to keep you going.
Cedric tucked it back into his pocket with a pat. Levi fought off a strong urge to vomit.
The party doesn't start for 2 hours. So run along, little pup. This is your chance. Run before we catch you.
2 hours. 2 hours. Then he was going to die. Cedric finished off his own drink and winked.
I'll see you at the party.
Levi nearly knocked over a table on his way to the door. Out of the bar, out of the lobby, outside to where the crisp night air bit into his skin. Cedric's laugh rang in his ears, and the farther Levi ran, the louder it grew. He turned the corner, half expecting to see Cedric standing in front of him, latched onto his very shadow. But Levi was alone. He slumped against a brick wall, letting the stones scrape against his bare back as his shirt rode up. Cedric had told him to run, but Levi wasn't sick. He knew how these things worked. If he ran, it would make Cedric's night only more fun. Instead, he sat there trembling for several minutes, sometimes crying, sometimes feeling nothing at all. His first thoughts were of Jack. Jack would get by without him, eventually. But for so long, Levi had been the stable anchor in Jack's otherwise directionless life. His friend might have found the faith after his last bout with Lullaby, but would prayer alone save him from relapse? Levi and Jack had followed each other down every dark road, but Levi hated to think how his friend could so easily follow him down this one. Then he thought of the Irons. After Levi died, Chez would be the undisputed Iron Lord, and Levi's legacy would fade. Another street lord, another rotten kid, another loser in the city's game. He thought about Raymond.
You're better than us, the Scar Lord had once told him. But he'd been wrong.
Levi had never been much of anything, and now they both would face the same fate. Out of all his regrets, Raymond was his worst. The grief rushed over him all at once, an ache worse than any of his injuries. Raymond was the only one in the world who'd watched out for Levi, and now his brother was dead. Fourth, he thought about N. Now that they'd discovered the truth about Lords, their story had ended.